brown skin girls.
Copper tone, oh, you copyright infringement.
French skin is caramel with the cocoa eyes.
Damn, she's fun. I think I add the R-E in front of that.
Brown sugar, babe. How do you feel?
I'm serious. I'm serious.
What's up, y'all? It's KC. Welcome back to the Brown Girl Hour with KC and T. Unfortunately, my other half, T, is under the weather tonight, but I am not alone. I am not alone at all. I am joined by the ladies of the Pisces Life, Kai Love and Leticia. Say hello, ladies.
Hello.
Peace, y'all. How y'all doing?
Yeah. And so tonight's conversation, I anticipate it's going to be really, really rich with these ladies. If you are not familiar with their show, I highly suggest you get familiar. They are coming out of the Black Astronauts camp. And can you all tell them a little bit about the Pisces Life?
So the Pisces Life is a spinoff show from the Black Astronauts podcast network. Both Leticia and I are kindred spirits of sorts. We both write for Sex and the Sisters, which is what got us on the original podcast of Ladies Launch first. We're both March-born Pisces, and we both are part of the greatest woman organization in the world. I'm biased, of course, and that is the lovely ladies of Delta Sigma Theta. And so we decided to pull together a podcast because we just had things that were more common among us. We both are in our 40s, Leticia turning 41 this year and me turning 40 next month. And just wanted to really kind of bring a more mature and relevant podcast out of our camp for people who have our types of concerns and issues and humor. And nothing against our other shows. You know, Ladies Launch is an awesome show and the synergies that we have with those four ladies. And, of course, our flagship show with Black Astronauts Podcast and those four gents and Can as the addition. They're awesome shows. But we wanted to kind of take a little bit more of a mature, you know, approach to certain topics that, you know, may not necessarily be so popular among the teeny boppers, but we seem to have a pretty good following even with folks in their 20s from the feedback that we're getting. So we're just thankful and grateful that folks are loving the show and commenting on the show and following us on social media. We really appreciate that support.
Yes, and it is a very rich listen. So I encourage anybody that's listening to us to absolutely take a moment and turn on the Pisces Life. It is a wonderful show full of good information. As Kai mentioned, it's humorous. I mean, it's you get everything that you need out of that show, in my opinion. So absolutely take a listen. Ladies, where can people find you?
Well, they can find me. Ooh, sorry. Boy, that Michigan cold got in this throat today, let me tell you. They can find me at I Am Just Leticia, L-E-T-I-T-I-A, on Twitter.
And I'm always in the Twitter streets, apparently. I need to give you some business is what I need to do. So if you're looking for me on the Twitter, you can find me at Kai Loves You, K-A-I-L-O-V-E-S-U.
All right. And so since our last show, T and I got together and decided that since this is the Brown Girl Hour, we need to honor brown girls every single episode. This is the last episode where we were giving honor to black women celebrating black history, our own personal little black history celebration. We realized we cut ourselves short. There were so many women, both famous and not so famous, that we could have talked about. And so we have decided that we will start to open every show honoring special black women to us, either, you know, personally or from afar. And so I have asked our guests tonight, Kai and Leticia, to bring some offerings to the table. And so I would love you both to share the people that you're bringing to the table, your brown girls?
Okay, so I've been stuck in academic world, so my brown girl comes from that space, but I think you'll understand the relevance and why I selected her. I selected Jacqueline Jones Royster, R-O-Y-S-T-E-R. And she is a scholar in rhetoric and composition, which is my field. And she has this poem, not poem, I'm sorry. She has this article that she wrote as a, her thematic choice was like a play. So there's scenes to the story that she's telling. But she begins with this point, and I'll leave it with you guys. Subject position is everything.
Mm-hmm.
How we see the world, how we're seen in the world, how we act in it, how we react to it, how we are told and retold, how we are done and redone. Every single thing that we are, subject position is everything. We can't control who interprets it, but we certainly, when we are the subject and not the object, but when we are the subject and it is our voice that we have in control, that's why these podcasts are so important.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why I feel very good about my academic life coming together with my podcast life, with my comedy life, with my writing life and all of those things. Because I think that it really gives us an opportunity to consider there are more than one ways to be. And in that same work, okay, so I forgot to tell you the name of it, sorry. It is called When the First Voice You Hear Is Not Your Own.
Mm.
And she's speaking basically to the academic and the institutions where we learn and we do the work of the elite, but we do it hopefully, humbly, you know?
Yes.
But when you talk about subject position being everything, and it being so salient to how we are in this world, for Black women right now, I can't think of a more critical narrative that is in need of dire love, that is in need of absolute being embraced. It breaks my heart that we can't even celebrate things like Black girls rock,
right,
without being criticized and hashtagged to hell,
right,
and back. For saying, damn it, we are all right. And we are awesome in our own skin and in our own space. So in that moment of subject position being everything, I needed that article. I was lost in graduate school my first semester. I was feeling so out of place. I was feeling stupid, honestly, which was a feeling I was not well acquainted with and hated. But I also felt written on. There were assumptions that were made about me to the point where I remember someone in authority called me into his office and said, do you think the world has a problem with you because you're a Black woman?
Wow.
When a white man asks you that, and that person has authority in a space where you are in and you want to get out, and you are essentially being paid for, and my work looks at colonizing. Ooh, I didn't know what all of that meant right then and there. And I know that that individual did not mean that, but we are products of the institutions still.
Yes.
That are writing on us, man.
Yes.
And media is an institution. I know that institution. I was trained to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is an institution that looks at everything else but itself. And I'll let the other lady speak. That's who I'm bringing to the table. I love her scholarship. There are other pieces that she's written that just bring our voices forward in a way, not only as a thing to be understood, but as a thing that can be interpreted, that can be loved, that can be embraced, that can be transported, and that most certainly can be valued.
Mm. Well said, sis.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. That was beautiful. Maya Brown Girl is my adoptive mother. Her name is Dr. Theresa Miller, who's moving your way, Casey, to the Los Angeles area. And she wrote me a poem of sorts, which is more to me like an empowerment statement. And I shared it with you ladies in the chat for your reading pleasure, because it's brought me a significant amount of peace in many of my darker days. And I won't read the entire thing, but I will share a couple of lines from it. But Dr. Theresa Miller is one of the most brilliant, articulate, passionate women that I've ever met. And the mere fact that, you know, she has done her job to ensure that I was okay when I needed a mother the most, is just a significant sacrifice, because she didn't have to do it and did it because she saw something in me. Mm-hmm. And Moody had said on his show last week some very beautiful things about me, and she mirrored those same statements to me as a child, that I was special and that there was something great in me and for me. And she wanted to make sure that I was able to reach that destination and not let my home situation deter me from that. And so I just wanted to read part of a letter that this poem that she wrote for me. And it says, I will honor my pain and not run from it. Pain is not my enemy. It is my teacher, leading me back to myself and forward to a place where there is no sense of loss. I will embrace my every moment. I will not frustrate my spirit by waiting for some happier time. Rather, I will detect beauty in small things. Cherish the morning quiet of my room, the cool breeze on my skin, and allow these to thrill me. I will embrace my every moment. I will bring less caution and more yes to my life until I find ecstasy in the ordinary, and until my soul is a summer child dancing under the sprinklers. Let the uncertainty of days bring me to reverence. All I have is now. I will savor every instant, exult in each one, and call it holy. Each day is perfect and sufficient for my happiness. I will embrace my every moment. And I have this hanging in my office, and I have this hanging right next to my bed. And when I feel down or low or doubt myself or feel less great, or, you know, as an astronaut out of orbit, as we say, I oftentimes read the entire letter, poem, and it instantly makes me feel empowered. Mm-hmm. And even though I don't see her every day or talk to her every day, I still feel her hand holding mine and telling me, Kai, you are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you are going to be great in this world. And I think that every brown girl, little and big, needs to have some other brown girl tell them that. Because it is those words that have saved me and protected me from doing and being great, or doing and being things that I never thought that I could. But that foundation, those words that have lifted me up throughout my entire adult life, is something that I wish upon all of our young ladies in society. They need that.
Yes. Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. And I'm here reading what she has written you. It is beautiful. Aww. It is powerful. Well, I thank you ladies for sharing your offerings. I am going to, on the behalf of my girl Toria, and hers is quick and sweet. She says, I do have a brown girl to highlight. Rebecca Lee Crumpler, the first African-American woman to earn a medical degree in 1864. She said,
I love it.
And she said, with me being the sick figure, I should give respect to a brown girl who devoted her life to healing folks and committed to black people's health. So
that I love it. Awesome. Now, is she in medical school?
Toria?
Yeah.
No. No, Toria works in technology.
Oh, okay, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I think she was, because of how she's feeling right now, that just seemed appropriate.
Okay, all right. I used to, I won't go there. I had another life in another space that I'd better keep that identity a little bit behind closed doors there.
Okay, we'll talk about it off mic.
There you go. Code name.
Wait a minute, Letitia. You already told them that you were stripping in Canada, so right, I don't know what else you got to talk about.
I got family coming down there to see you Saturday, girl. My people's in Detroit, going to be in Canada trying to drop dollars on Letitia.
Let me tell you, if I get one more DM about that... It's like, really? Had I known I could have been getting that change in them coins there. I was thinking awesome. To myself, wow, is this a new thing, a fetish? Y'all want to see an ample bottom brown girl up on that pole? Is that what you're telling me, huh?
I think the brothers is not against that at all. Not even a little bit.
Right, I think they support that in all ways.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I was cracking up. I was like, wow, that was pretty dang on convincing. I'm putting that in my comedy act, getting ready for a big show in a couple of weeks here. So yeah, that's going in, because that's been hella funny to me.
Oh yeah, that's what had me in stitches. That was one of the points of the conversation. I was like, I think I'm going to be sick. You said it so swift, you were so quick with it. I was like, oh man, that's great.
Oh gosh,
the brown girl I'm bringing to the table is honestly an extension of what we did last week. She's somebody who was part of old Black Hollywood, which I'm truly fascinated with that time period, because I feel like those mm-hmm. people had to battle so much.
Yes.
And had to just get into their discomfort mm-hmm. For the sake of doing what it is that they love.
Mm.
And this woman's name is Butterfly McQueen.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I loved Butterfly McQueen from the first time I saw her next to Ethel Waters in Cabin in the Sky, because her cheekbones are just like my mother's.
Mm.
Her smile is very much like my mother's. And that voice is one that you are never, ever going to forget. If she were living today, she probably would be a millionaire doing voiceovers, because her voice was very distinct. But mm-hmm. if you read Miss McQueen's history, most of the roles that she played were stereotypes, you know, maids or servants of some part. But she lived a very quiet life, never married, never had any children. Just went about her career. And I remember when she died, because she had an awful, awful death. She was in her 80s, lighting a kerosene lamp, and it exploded and she burned.
Oh, wow.
And so she died mm-hmm. from those burns. And I was heartbroken that she died in that way. But what I found interesting about Butterfly McQueen, and it was something that I did not know about her before, was that she was openly an atheist. Which is really an unpopular train of thought, in my opinion, when it comes to the Black community. You don't have a whole lot of Black folks spouting atheism.
Mm-mm. No, not at all.
But she was quoted as saying, "I'm an atheist, and Christianity appears to me to be the most absurd imposture of all the religions. And I'm puzzled that so many people can't see through a religion that encourages irresponsibility and bigotry. As my ancestors are free from slavery, I am free from the slavery of religion."
Mm.
And I found that interesting. It spoke to me, because I definitely went through a period of questioning the religious foundation on which I was raised. And that was part of it, understanding that Christianity was used as a tool to enslave.
Mm-hmm.
And being challenged by a professor when I was an undergrad, who was saying to me, you know, "Kimberly, you're so smart, but I don't." And at that time, I was very defensive of my religious beliefs. And he said, "I just don't understand how you can put two and two together in regard to how the transatlantic slave trade happened, yet you fight for this Christianity. You fight for what it is that you've been taught." And my experiences with him doing some reading, doing some traveling abroad, had me in a definite I don't want to say purgatory, but religious limbo, so to speak, for a very, very long time. I had so many questions that were just unanswered. So I'm saying all of that to say at this point, I would not call myself an atheist, but I am intrigued by someone who made that decision during this particular time, because she was coming up during her career was happening prior to the civil rights movement, but she was definitely living through that period, and the Black church was so critical at that time. And so, you know, to me, it would take a different kind of strength to get through what she was dealing with and not call on some God to get through it. So, Butterfly McQueen.
I love that. I love that story. I love that history. And,
right, I didn't know that either.
And I am so about to go and read when we get off the show so I can understand, because as a non-Christian person who grew up in a fairly Christian household, mm-hmm. that story speaks to me. Mm-hmm. And not to speak for Butterfly, which I love her name. I believe that I'm going to be Butterfly tomorrow. I'm going to change my name for the day.
Go for it, girl.
But I think that, you know, as a non-Christian person, I can identify that there is a God in me, and I see that there are gods in other people. And I know that Christian folks, you know, shy away from that because of the structure of the religious context. But I think that when you said she wasn't necessarily, you know, relying on the God or calling the deity of the time because of what she was dealing with, if she saw herself as a deity, mm-hmm. then she's relying on self, and that's who she was calling on mm-hmm. to push and maneuver her way through those trials and tribulations. So I just wanted to add that as a caveat of thought.
Yes. I agree wholeheartedly with that too, right. Because she was definitely somebody who was in the shadows at that time. You know, like Tori and I touched on last week, when we think of Black Hollywood, you have your few staples who come mm-hmm. to the forefront, but they all fit, and it's in no way to negate who these women are, but they all fit our traditional American stereotype of what Black beauty is. Mm-hmm. And Butterfly was somebody who was different than that. She was a chocolate sister, small, had a high-pitched, squeaky voice. And to me, those people always are somehow kind of pushed to the parameters of things that are going on. They're never given the same sort of highlight or accolades or even appreciated as much, even though they work just as hard and even sometimes harder, because they are given those roles where they have to play the character that is subservient, the most obvious Black woman stereotype of that time. And so I just love her. I just love her. Any film that she's been in, I've just always appreciated her. And she's usually cast in the supporting role. But yeah, Miss Butterfly McQueen. So that takes care of us talking about our brown girls. Mm-hmm. Tonight's topic is touching on a recent situation that happened with Ray Rice and his girlfriend, fiance, if I'm incorrect. Caught on camera dragging her unconscious out of an elevator. And then now we hear that there's actual footage of him striking her, uppercutting her. Mm-hmm. And so the question we're asking tonight is, what do young women need to know about dealing with angry reactions from men? And immediately my mind goes to the fact Christopher and I, every now and again, we get caught up in moments of smut television. Mm-hmm. And the other night we were caught up in Real Housewives of Atlanta, which we don't even watch on a regular basis, but it was one of those, okay, we got like 3 or 4 episodes happening back to back. Right. And this particular episode, like, I could get into the Black women stereotypes that show perpetuates all day, but this was an episode where the brothers were getting into fights and how quickly the anger and the situations just escalated was really kind of just nerve-wracking. Like, you couldn't even really follow what happened to get 4 or 5 grown men angry to the point where they're throwing fists. And I thought about that in regard to women in relationships with men who are batterers. And of course, not at all trying to accuse these men of being batterers. But if you're in a situation with a man and this is his way of dealing with his frustration, first of all, how do you, what do we tell young women to keep them from getting in those situations? Because the one thing I've come to understand over time, there are some people who equate that kind of relationship with love. They equate violence with passion, and that hitting or that disciplining, depending on how they perceive it, as an act of love. I personally can't see love that way. And I think a lot of it is because I come from a family that is riddled with domestic violence. Several generations. My grandmother was in a domestic violent, she was in a abusive marriage. My mother was in an abusive marriage. And they preached to me, like preyed on me, filled my mind with all sorts of thoughts and ideas to ensure that when I did choose a husband, that I would move so far away from both of their experiences. So the idea of ever being battered in a relationship is not even something that I could even swallow comfortably. And so this really means something to me that these young ladies are dealing with these sort of situations. And I think it's a question sometimes, if we're looking at a brother like Ray Rice, is it a situation of, because of his financial situation, his financial status and his fame, that I'm willing to put up with this? I don't know. I'm going to put it out there to you ladies. What are your thoughts about this?
Ooh, yeah.
Heavy. I too, you know, have had instances of seeing domestic violence throughout, you know, my family. And it's not something that is pretty, and it does affect you as a child when you see it, of course. But what it did for me is it provided me with a kind of fight or flight response to conflict. But not so much fight, more like flight, because it always frightened me as a child. So as an adult or as a young person, if a man raises his voice to me, I am shutting all the way down, because I revert back to being that young person who saw, you know, women being victimized by men and being hurt in many cases. I am not sure if we have become a society that only values and speaks out against domestic violence situations when both parties are famous, if we hear about it in the news. Because if we go back to the Chris Brown and Rihanna situation and how everyone was all in an uproar and talking about that situation, and this young lady, which was knocked unconscious and dragged by this famous person because she was just a regular old chickadee, I didn't see or hear about that same level of outrage. I saw a couple of media outlets talk about it, but I mean, you were around when the Chris Brown and Rihanna situation hit the news.
Right.
How it went on for weeks.
Yes.
At a time. And it's still going on because, you know, he continuously has gotten into trouble. But I just didn't see that same level of outrage. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was because this lady, you know, was just a regular woman. And we've devalued women so much in society that if you're not famous, if you're not Beyonce or Rihanna or someone who has a name or, you know, refers to themselves by one name, then that means that your life or, you know, your status is not, you know, as important as anybody else. It was a disgusting video, the short little piece of it that I saw. And this again, the continued objectification of women in society and how we've moved into this kind of neutral space where no one wants to speak about it and is almost acceptable. And I think that reality TV and TV period has basically provided us with a platform where we've gone soft when it comes to violence because we just kind of expect it.
Mm-hmm. Desensitized.
Mm-hmm. And desensitized, that's the word. Mm-hmm.
And so because we see it all the time, you know, again, you mentioned Real Housewives of Atlanta, and we touched on that on our last Pisces Life show. It's not uncommon for us to see people getting into these very volatile, violent interactions with each other, mm-hmm. you know, male and female, female on male, female and female, male on male. And I think as a society, we just need to figure out where we've lost our value in each other. I posted on Facebook today a quote about that I wish people would value each other and each other's feelings as much mm-hmm. as we value like technology. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Technology has evolved in such a way that we love technology. As soon as the new phone, so they posted something from Samsung today that they releasing something, and it was like, you know, 1,900, you know, retweets of that immediately within the first 5 seconds. But did this story with this girl being dragged in this hotel lobby, was that retweeted 1,900 times in 5 seconds?
No.
Did we comment on it? Did we go into outrage about it? Did any, and I'm speaking for myself, did Kai Love, who is on the Twitter streets at all times, did she go on and say, this is some bullshit? She did not. So.
Yeah. I get what you're saying, sis. We are, we see it. And I think your point is very valid about the fact that we will quickly get up into the lives of celebrities because that's interesting, because they're supposed to do certain things or not do certain things. We hold them to a particular standard. And what trips me out about this situation most often is people, and they even said this with Rihanna, and I'm not going to front and say these questions don't cross my mind, but people always say, well, before we start pointing an accusatory finger at the man, we need to find out the other side of the story. What happened? And, you know, when we had the break podcast this weekend, one of the conversations that we put to the table was, is there ever something a woman can do to a man that would make it okay for him to hit her? And it was a consensus, you know what I'm saying? Unless the woman is coming at you with a gun or has an intention of taking your life, no,
mm-hmm.
there is no good reason. You know, so whatever the circumstances are, you know, it cannot be justified you knocking a woman out like she's a man. You putting your hands on a woman at all in that way. Leticia, what say girl, you, my dear?
Listen, this one has got me all revisiting my period of dating folks that I really just had no business. And I was seeing someone who just really was way past my cool. And I can admit that, way past my experiences of living in life. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything in terms of the way I grew up. You know, my parents, opposites do attract. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And my parents, I grew up with, you can call it a contradiction. You can call it a yin and a yang. I call it reality. My father was not the churchgoer, but my mama was. And and their balance in their relationship and their love for each other was, and supporting me as their daughter is what made everything work. So I grew up in a household where there was a lot of love. My parents were affectionate. I understood that, et cetera. But when I lost both of them, there was a period that I lost myself. So I was attracting folks that I normally, I believe, would not have attracted had I not been in such a dark space. So this guy that I was seeing, and what's so crazy about it, baby, I macked up on him. Oh, yeah. She's a flirt. Yes. So I saw him. We were out and about at this particular thing. And he was leaning up against the wall, scoping out the crowd. So I acted like I was walking by him. And I doubled back and I leaned up on the other side of the wall next to him. And I said, whatever you looking at, it couldn't have been me because I walked by, you know. And then we just started talking from there. Now, the first flash of anger that I saw was an interaction with his baby mama. One of them. Okay. Mm-hmm. Being woken up out of my sleep with someone laying next to you hollering and snapping and carrying on, and you don't hear the phone ring. All you hear is somebody just into a conversation and the B word is flying and F this. And I'm looking for my stuff. Like, wait a minute now. What's going on? Not realizing that he was on the phone. And I'm thinking to my, and I'm listening to this conversation. And I kept thinking, my father was a corrections officer. And I kept thinking about the conversation that he and I had about dating. And he said, if a man will use angry words with you, oh, trust and believe, his body will respond, his fist will ball up, and it will find somewhere to be. Hmm. And that is something that stuck with me. And I'm listening at this individual, and the mother of his child. And I mean, the way he talked to that woman, and I'm thinking to myself at the time that this is all out of my range, right? Long story short, there were several other incidents that happened along the way. The last incident was simply, you know, being incarcerated. And, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to be there. And it's not fair to ask you to wait. And I'm like, thank you, Jesus. I'm sorry that he had to go through what he went through on one hand, but I'm also very sorry for the reason that he, that he had to go. Let's just say that his fist found somebody else. And I'm glad it wasn't my face.
You know, very much like your father told you, what my mother and grandmother told me was, if a man hits you once, he'll hit you again.
Okay.
So never think that if he says, honey, I'll never do it again. I did it once and I promise I'll never. That's never the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If he does it once, he'll do it again. And you know, both of them were victimized. My grandmother more so than my mother, because my mother was witness to what my grandmother went through. And like Kai said, it will have an impact on you as a child.
Mm.
And so it made her a very nervous person. And when she saw my father have some remnants of that sort of behavior, she made her plans.
Mm-hmm.
She made her plans to get gone. You know, and the interesting thing is now that they're older, you know, and my father has remarried and, you know, he's turned his life around and all that sort of stuff. But he says to me so honestly, I did not know how to love your mother. I was so young and I just didn't know what to do with her. And he said, I still love her. I still love her so much. I dream of her sometimes. He said, but, you know, I just did not know what to do with something so precious. I didn't, you know, and when I look back into his life, there's so many things, there's so many factors that could go into it. His mother died when he was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And so he lacked some nurturing, you know, and there's, I mean, you, and when I look, think of my grandfather and the way he did my grandmother, I mean, you could look in his background and see the same thing. And I'm sure if we were to, like, almost do a spreadsheet of men who are abusers, there's some commonality in regard to their parental experience that lead them to possibly have this behavior. But it's scary. It's scary in two different ways. It's scary that some of our men are coming up not receiving enough nurturing in whatever capacity to understand how to deal with the woman and communicate with the woman in a way that does not involve violence. But it's also just as scary to understand that we have some women who don't recognize that this is dangerous. This is your life. And I do not mean to take over our conversation, but this thought just came to me. When I was in high school, I had a good friend, and she was dating another friend of mine, this big goofball, funny guy. And they didn't last long, but she and I stayed friends in spite of their relationship ending, and she got into a relationship with another guy. And he was violent. He was an abuser. And she would make excuses for him. And it was all kind of different situations going on with her living situation. You know, she wasn't living with her parents. She was living with an uncle. So things were just kind of sketchy in regards to what was happening as far as her foundation and who was there to protect her. And I will never forget, she was a few years older than me. She came to my house one night with a black eye. And she had this whole story. Oh, girl, I was wearing my hair in bangs, and I had hairspray and the hairspray. I had a allergic reaction to it, and my eyes just turned dark. And when she left, my mother said, baby, I know a man's fist on the face when I see it. Tell that baby to go put a stake on her eye. So that boy socked her. He socked her in her face. That's what that is. And I immediately got scared for her. Shortly thereafter, she got pregnant and had a child with the guy. And one night called me screaming at the top of her lungs. And I won't say his name, but she's screaming at me. He beat me. He beat me. And he took my baby. He took my baby. And he's in the background screaming at her, I don't love you, calling her all out her name. It's my baby. You'll never see him again. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Baby screaming and crying. Newborn. You know, and she's hollering and screaming. And I'm thinking to myself, baby, I have no idea why you called me. There's nothing I could do. Like, call the police. And she's like, he's telling me if I call the police, he's going to kill the baby and he's going to kill me. And I couldn't even imagine that level of terror to experience that. And I think she had to be 17 at the time. And
was so young
to be dealing with this sort of situation. And so I, sad to say, at that point, we stayed in contact, but our relationship definitely drifted apart. And I say fast forward maybe 6-7 years later, because I was out of college and I'm somewhere in the hood video store or something, and I see her and him and 3 kids. And I said, wow, she's still there. And we made eye contact, and I smiled. She did not smile back, and we did not speak. And I haven't seen her since then. And I think about her. I pray for her when she comes to mind. But I'm concerned for, like I said, for both parties that think of this as an act of love. You know what I mean? That don't see any other way or don't consider that there's an alternative to this type of situation. You know, what from your lady's experience, what is something that you would want to say to a young woman or a young man that finds themselves in this situation? Him angry enough to want to hit and hurt her, vulnerable enough to believe that that is a showcase of love.
Wow.
Well, I think, Casey, the first thing is you have to recognize that something is wrong. If you feel like this is how relationships go, quote unquote, then the advice that may come from someone to say, you know, baby girl, you don't have to deal with that, or you don't have to deal, you know, in that, will fall upon deaf ears, because that person will be like, this is how it's supposed to be. And I'm speaking for, you know, the society of violence that we currently reside in. If you feel like men and women fight, then, you know, there may not be words to help to pull you or to deter you from further engagement. But the one thing that my mom, Dr. Miller, said is love doesn't hurt.
Right.
Under no circumstance. It's not supposed to hurt. So even in KC, with you being married, you know, you and Chris get into it or whatever, mm-hmm. and have your fights or whatever. Your feelings may get hurt, but that over time heals. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but we're talking about that hurt that don't heal. And I'm just going to say, you punching me in my face, mm-hmm. and I got to now wear sunglasses and a floppy hat.
Right.
In 140 degree weather in the Dominican, because I'm trying to hide the fact that you did that. Right. And that's, no thanks be to the creator that has never happened to me before. But I'm just saying, that's like hurt that you carry forever.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. and it just seems like that would be my advice. I would follow in that same vein that, you know, love is supposed to be, you know, more good times than bad times.
Right.
And if someone is abusing you, whether that's an emotional abuse, whether that's physical abuse, that if you are unhappy and still with the person, then you need to question why. Why are you holding on? And why are you not wanting to let go? And why do you not feel that your value is higher than that,
mm-hmm.
to have to deal with that? It is such a complex situation when it comes to incidents of abuse.
Yes.
Especially determining, and I think because now the lines are so blurred, where, and again, going back to the Rihanna Chris Brown thing, and you mm-hmm. mentioned it, Casey, about, you know, looking at or wanting to know what she did, or what, you know, did she do anything to provoke it?
Mm-hmm.
But again, the acceptable answer is, yeah, they both got into it and we should kind of mind our own business.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That, and so we have to kind of figure out a way to address the violence overarching and then speak to some self-esteem issues, not just in women, but in men too, because there's women that abuse men as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there are. There are.
Yes. You know, the other thing that I think is important to mention to this conversation, we've talked a lot about the physical stuff, but the emotional and the mental abuse and the financial abuse, all of those things that we also are dismissive about. A lot of women sometimes who are being controlled financially think that that's a provision or that's a way of being provided for and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you're asking your man for money to buy feminine products? I don't see how that's... I don't want to be that love like that. Thanks. You know, but I mean, there's just so many different constructions of what relationships are and what people are willing to accept, or how people are even willing to construct them.
Yes.
Some people construct them from a space of hurt. I was constructing relationships from a space of grief. And I can step back and now realize that. But, you know, when you talk about somebody that's being abusive, angry words and following through on other moments of dissatisfaction and responding in an angry way.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody is against you. I spent time with a student talking about a paper that he wanted to write, just a quick example. And, you know, he wanted to write about how Black men were treated in America. And the paper needed to have sources and all of this stuff. And so he cited himself, you know, and his experiences. I love it. And that's great. But when you're writing a research paper, you have to look at other people's stuff. So I said, look and see what they say about Black men in America. They meaning academic journals, you know, Psychology Today and all of this stuff. Once he saw how people talked about Black men in academic ways, scholarly ways, and media ways or whatever, and he started analyzing the talk, I said, what in the world are you saying? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So you start thinking through all of the images and these examples. A lot of men, I think, and my friend Q says this to me all the time. He's like, you're asking men or expecting men to love you from a place that they have no capacity or no depth a lot of times.
Right.
They don't have a space to go to say, you know, oh, that's what love looks like, and here is how you exhibit it. And then when we do find men who do that, then what do? He's a punk. What's wrong with him? They were talking about that last night on the In Deep show. If a man doesn't chase you right away for the draws, you know, and he waits, is that mean that he's not into you, or do you question what's wrong with him? Do you accuse him of liking someone else, et cetera? So I don't know. People are out here constructing a ruckus in relationships. That's all I can tell you.
Thank you, family, for tuning in to this episode of the Brown Girl Hour. This is part one of two with the ladies from the Pisces life. As always, you can find us at blackisonline.com, on Twitter at blackisonline, on Facebook at blackismagazine, and call the hotline at 323-455-4219. Feel free to drop me an email at kc@blackisonline.com and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher. Until next time, peace.